Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I mean, what's Pro Football Focus doing? Last week they had Brady. This week they got Brady.
We're doing it. We're literally doing it differently from everybody else.
As a matter of fact, moving forward from this point on, I will not make reference to PFL.
Ready to get into it?
Yeah.
All right. We're going team by team. I would be very careful about slinging stuff. Am I going to get sued?
Are we going legal on this?
I like football. I like football season and all the things that go with it.
Monday morning, post-NFL Combine, we're back in the Western and Southern studio. Sam Monson here, Mike Renner, for another couple of days until Steve drags his ass back from the Sloan Analytics Conference, which is where he currently is posted up. How's it going, Mike?
Doing great. Did Steve debut the model there? Is that why he's there?
I don't know if he debuted the model. I'm sure, whether or not it was on stage, I'm sure the model was given plenty of, you know.
Or was Sloan basically just Steve's model this year? That was like the purpose of Sloan.
No, he was very much just a part of the panel that I watched. Yeah. But I would imagine, like, behind the scenes, you know, off stage, he's the showing them the Excel spreadsheet, like, every opportunity he gets, presumably on the iPad, you know. Look, we can scroll through here. I can improve everything by 80%. Yeah. I think that was the sales pitch, basically, for the days surrounding his actual appearance on the panel.
It's going to blow up. It's going to blow up now.
How was the Combine for you?
Combine was great. A lot of data to pour over. I was up till like 3 a.m. yesterday because I was so hopped up on caffeine from the weekend. I think I burst a blood vessel in my eye. I don't know if you can see it. Red, like right there. Yeah. So the post-combine wasn't the ideal, but the combine itself is a good time.
I was thinking, watching last night from the couch, you know, can you imagine still being there? Like day seven, still grinding, waiting for the last running back drills in the stands up at Indy there?
No.
That would have been rough.
Yeah.
You
Thank
know?
God we were not one of those. I enjoyed myself on the couch watching all the drills.
You definitely hit a wall late in the week, and you need out.
Hats off to DJ and anyone announcing there. That had to be quite the marathon.
Rich Eisen, I think, managed to get through the entire week without paying for a drink or a meal. I think that was the streak he was going for. So kudos to Rich. He also, I think, beat somebody in the 40 for the first time ever, right?
Well, someone fell, right?
Yes. Yeah. That's why. Okay. But look, a win is a win, Mike. You take them where you can get them when you run a 4.6 flat. You take the dubs where they are. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Rich didn't eat it. Man could have hit the dirt on any one of those 40s, and he hasn't yet.
That is actually impressive that no hamstring, no quad has been just obliterated.
Has he pulled something once? Am I making that up? Well, you're right. It's not a bad run for a guy that, you know, doesn't seem to be in the peak of physical fitness at this point in his life.
And he's getting up there because he was the OG NFL Network. I remember.
Right, back in the when
Wow, it first you know how old he is? He's way younger than I would have expected.
He's got to be 50 now, though, right?
He's only 53, though.
Okay, yeah.
I would have said like 60.
Harsh.
But just because he's so, like,
bald.
Just because
he's what
been,
it is, right?
Well, no, just because he's
just,
been
you're anti-bald. That's
around my
about.
Entire life, basically.
That's true.
You know, like, he was.
Well, how long?
I just assume if I watched you on TV as a kid.
How long has NFL Network been
You're 60 years old. NFL Network started in, what, 03, 04?
Yeah, because he was like day one.
Yeah, he switched from ESPN
so
to
he's done
NFL
that for
Network
20 years.
For that. So, yeah, 03. I'm actually on Rich Eisen's page right now. It was 2003.
Right. June. So, literally 20 years of that. So, yeah, it's a pretty good going for old Rich. He's also, by the way, I mean, without making this the Rich Eisen show, he already has one of those. He's stupidly good at that stuff, particularly the combine, where theoretically it's kind of a dull affair, just in conceptual terms, right? It's two guys sitting there commenting on a bunch of drills, mm-hmm. some of which are pretty boring. He's so good at being able to make that entertaining and interesting and talking to people. And like the dude, like he's so good at that
yes.
stuff.
Yes. I mean, the fact that they pegged him to be there, like he was like the anchor right. of NFL Network when it debuted. He was like the personality, and that hit it so hard out the park with that hire. You know, hats off to whoever made that decision at NFL Network, because yeah, Rich Eisen's one of the best ever.
Okay, before we get into it, the PFF NFL podcast is sponsored by Western Southern Financial Group. You can see the plaque on the wall. You can also see, by the way, our fancy new sign down here on the desk. We have had it upgraded to reflect the new PFF logo, the latest PFF logo. While you focus on your roster moves, Western and Southern helps advance your money moves. Buying your first home, planning to start a family, wondering how to make your money grow, Western and Southern's playbook of life insurance, investment, and retirement solutions helps you rest assured on game day. Team up to understand needs and address goals with a game plan built just for you. Get started at westernsouthern.com/PFF. That's westernsouthern.com/PFF. All right, Mike, we're going to be talking winners and losers from the combine. Mm-hmm. We're going to start off with some defense. We talked a little bit about this because the last show we had was after the first day of the drills. So I don't want to spend too long on the defensive side of stuff because we've kind of talked about it already. But let's run through quickly. Defensive linemen, who are your winners and losers from the combine?
Yeah, I want to preface by saying this is winners and losers. We and I hand out winners and losers. It's like versus my expectation.
Sure.
If you want just the guys who tested out the best, you know, go use relative athletic score. Like, go find that. Like, you can go look at the numbers yourselves and really find out who tested the best. But this is like how I felt based on their tape, and then who maybe exceeded my expectations based off of that. And then in turn, we'll be rising up to PFF draft board because of it. The guys that I really want to highlight, that because you stole two of the guys who I would have also highlighted, but Adetemiwa Adebare, Northwestern DT.
I also specifically left him for you so that you would be the guy pronouncing his name, not me.
Yeah, it's very smart on your part.
Thank you.
And also an all-timer. An absolute all-time combine performance. Truly maybe like the most impressive performance I've ever seen at the combine.
I love this particular stat. There's a couple of them from NFL research that he ran the same 40 time as Tank Dell, who was 165 pounds.
Yes.
That's madness. He's 100 pounds heavier. More than 100 pounds heavier.
17 pounds heavier.
Yeah, than Tank Dell and ran the exact same 40 time. That's ridiculous.
Probably the single craziest 40 time I've ever seen. 4.49 at 282.
4.49.
And then a 37.5-inch vertical, 10.5 broad jump, 27 bench press reps with almost 34-inch arms. So he is, by any stretch, he's the most explosive defensive tackle testing-wise ever. And it's not even particularly close. Like, he's Aaron Donald and then some at that size. Yeah. I just in awe of those numbers. And, like, you see it on tape, but he really doesn't have kind of the – I don't think he was given the freedom, truthfully, at Northwestern to really, like, just win or just really go after quarterbacks. He had to kind of fill his role in that defense. And a lot of times when he did play on the interior at Northwestern, which at that size you're going to play in the NFL. I don't think he's going to stay on the edge, even though that's where he played primarily at Northwestern. Mm-hmm. When he did play in the interior, he was kind of like a placeholder. Like, he would be the guy stunting. He would be the guy slanting. He kind of had to – feel his role. He couldn't just beat the guard in front of him.
Is he actually the guy? Is he what you're describing is effectively the excuses that were made for Trayvon Walker a year ago that might not have actually been true for Walker, but they might be true for this guy. Like, he was captive. He was held captive by the defensive scheme, which essentially asked him to do things that weren't playing to his skill set.
Yes.
Whereas Trayvon Walker, maybe that was true, but maybe he also just wasn't great at rushing the passer.
Yeah, I think that's 100% true with Adebare. He's has the twitch to get by guys with that alone, but really just didn't utilize it fully on tape. So very excited to see, one, where he lands, two, what he kind of can develop into, because that is a athletic profile that you should be able to tap into.
The 4.49 thing is mind-blowing. Like, everything else is really impressive. Everything, like, the whole package is phenomenal. But running, like, a 4.49 is a fast time. Mm-hmm. Like, Tank Dell, okay, maybe it's a little bit disappointing for him, but, like, it's not a bad time. at 165 pounds. For add another 120 to it, to run that is absolutely absurd.
Unbelievable.
Same kind of vein. I had Kalijah Kansi in there as a winner just because he was already getting the obvious comps to Aaron Donald because same size, same kind of athleticism, coming out of the same school. It's just too obvious a comp to make. And now he basically posted the exact same numbers as Aaron Donald across the board. It's only going to continue those comps. It's only going to continue to drive his stock higher, I think, because of that obvious precedent that Aaron Donald set, even if, as we've already discussed, like, he isn't Aaron Donald. But that's only going to help his draft stock, I think, given those kind of numbers he put up.
And again, if you're small, better be an elite athlete.
Right.
He's small. Well, he's also an elite athlete. All right. My other winner, it's got to be Lucas Van Ness. On tape, I talked about how he's like a unique player and a unique athlete and just how he plays. And I think he showed that at the combine as well. Like, his testing was weird, to say the least. 6'5", 272, 34-inch arms, 11-inch hands. That's like lab-built defensive end frame for the kind of game he plays, a power defensive end. You want long arms. You want big hands. Control blocks. Get on, guys. That's his game. So those are box-ticking numbers. Great. And then he only had a 31-inch vertical and 9'10 broad jump. Those are like below-average numbers, right. I'd say. But then he goes, I believe, 4.58 in the 40. On the screen, it says 4.64. I believe that's a typo. It's 4.58. At 272 pounds, it is an insane time. And that's kind of just with the 1.64-10 split, another tremendous time. Like, his get-off is unique for a dude that size. And that's really how he wins. So I think that's a performance that really backs up that the way he plays on tape at Iowa can translate to the NFL.
We got some breaking news before we get into the other stuff. Vikings are releasing Eric Kendricks.
Oh, I was hoping Rodgers got traded.
No, sadly not that breaking news. Eric Kendricks is a guy we talked about as being a potential camp casualty at some point. He's now the wrong side of 30, or is 30, I guess, which is the wrong side of 30.
31.
31.
Yes, the wrong side.
He's coming off a bad year. He's now presumably going into a defensive scheme if he'd stayed there that is the polar opposite of the one he was in before and the one he excelled in. And had a high cap number attached to him as well. There were a lot of things that were lining up to suggest that they might get rid of a guy like Eric Kendricks. So from that point of view, I think it makes sense. But potentially, he's still one of the better linebackers available in free agency if you get the right scheme and you decide that last year wasn't the start of the end of his career, but actually just a bad season and a bad defense.
Yeah, I worry about linebackers on the decline usually because it's similar to running back and just the amount of hits you take. That you decline physically without any real, you don't need massive injuries. You're just, your body's hurt. You know, your body is at that age as a linebacker, your body is going south. So yeah, I would be surprised if he gets anything more than like a throwaway deal in free agency.
Yeah, I think it's definitely scary anytime you are that wrong side of 30 and have a bad year. It's like, trying to determine whether that was the start of it, you know, and this is the end, or you just had a bad year. Yeah. Like, that happens, right? Mm-hmm. I think it's a difficult thing for teams to do. For the Vikings, it's obviously a no-brainer. Like, you can just use that as an excuse, therefore, to jettison the guy and go in a different direction. But for another team, trying to determine if this is a potential bargain out here can improve our defense, or a guy you don't want to bring in because he's already on the downslope, that, I think, is a tough thing for teams to do. It's all right. There's our breaking news. Where else have we got any more defensive linemen we want to talk about?
Well, no, you want to talk about Nolan Smith because you got the two undersized guys who are.
Yeah, I mean, it's obvious, right? He had just an incredible workout. I think everybody thought that would happen anyway. So, you know, maybe he's not a winner relative to expectations, but he came out there as an undersized guy under 240 pounds, which I've seen some people argue was the most relevant number he put up during the week, you know? He is that small. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to be that small, get in the 4.3s, 4.3, 9.40. Have a 10-yard split of 1.5, which is a wide receiver kind of number. You know, post the kind of workout numbers that he did to say, yes, I am this small, but look, it's worth it. Like, I'm bringing the other things to the table that make it worth your while. He's an undersized speed edge rusher, but he's got ability to play the run. He's got some power, and he put out a pretty impressive workout overall.
Yeah, I mean, it's more about the ability, size matters, don't get me wrong, but it is more about your ability to generate power, because power and explosiveness. Because, like, at 238, with the numbers he put up, and again, that 238 is good weight because he's listed at 235. So he's up from whatever he was listed at Georgia.
I think we had this conversation with
and worked out, so it's not like Bryce Young's weight.
Yeah,
where,
yeah.
You know, I'm going to put on as much weight as humanly possible and then not sit here and not move.
Yeah, but he puts on, just say, a 10-pound lead jacket tomorrow. He's still running sub 4.5.
Right.
You know, he's still jumping like 36 inches, 37 inches.
That's
he's still an explosive dude.
It's a drill I'd like to see.
The 10-pound
yeah.
weighted jump. Yeah. I mean, like, he can get up to a good weight and still be an elite athlete.
And I think, obviously, you got to talk about Jalen Carter as a loser. I mean, not for workouts, but during the combine, the man got sent home to deal with an arrest warrant. It doesn't get much worse than that.
Yeah. Hard to do worse unless you're – who was the Alabama
There have been some
linebacker?
Pretty spectacular – yeah. Reuben Foster got sent home for basically intimidating the medical staff.
Fighting the med staff.
Right, during his medicals. Maurice Hurst got sent home with a heart condition. That's pretty bad. Orlando Brown went through his workouts, but it was basically the worst workout known to man. So that was pretty bad. But that's like – that's your top five – essentially, yeah. Worst combines of all time, and he's in that.
Yeah, I guess with I'm trying to weigh it, I think maybe Hurst's was probably the worst. Where
yes.
It's like, hey, you might die
right.
if you play this game.
That's bad.
That's a bad combine.
Although I did remember making a joke at the time that Orlando Brown had the worst combine of the year, including Maurice Hurst. So technically, I've already ranked Brown ahead of Hurst for
but
how bad it was.
Brown did fall. I mean, they're all. They all fell probably more than Carter's going to fall if we're keeping it real here.
Right.
Like Carter, when you're that talented, GMs will make excuses for your bad behavior. It's a fact of life. It's been, you know, it's been the way the NFL's operated since the inception.
There's also enough time for them to get cover. Like if this gets worked out between now and the draft and it ends up being whatever the punishment for the misdemeanors is, you know, fines, community service, blah, blah, blah. Once there's a legal bow put on that, that's like the green light for NFL teams to go.
He served his time.
Right, it's done now.
He did his
right. It's all worked out. Like now we're just taking a guy who we know has got blah blah blah. You know, excuse it that way. Like if it happened days before the draft, all of a sudden you've got the whole thing is already a burning inferno of PR that you got to navigate.
I'm already looking forward to the GM press conference post whoever drafts him. Just the. The word salad we're going to get served.
I hope they use ChatGPT.
What should I? ChatGPT, be a GM who just drafted a player who.
Justify the drafting of Jalen Carter in the top five in the style of, you know, whatever GM is relevant. Have you got any losers? I have both the Carters, in fact. Jalen Carter and Andre Carter, Andre Carter obviously didn't have an arrest, but didn't have an insane workout, which I think a lot of people would have been expecting.
Yeah, I had Mike Morris. He didn't test well. Came in underweight. Came in like 275. But I do want to hammer home that Andre Carter, that was ugly. Now, his shuttle is very good, 4.36. But I want to know who even told him to do the bench press when he did 11 reps. You don't all of a sudden be like, you know, I've been doing 20 all week. Now
11.
I hit 11. No, like he probably at best was doing like 14-15. And if you're a defensive end, 14-15 is abysmal. And you see it on his tape. Like that is the unique thing about Andre Carter, is that there's a valid excuse for why he's built like a defensive end recruit and not, you know, already a defensive end prospect. It's that he's taking, you know, 2 months or so out of every single year to run and train to be in the Army and not actually care
about the Army. Right.
Being 270 with his frame and a powerful defensive end. It's like why Army runs
11 reps.
They can't hold on that weight.
11 reps is the kind of number where you're better off just not doing the bench, period, than putting up 11 reps.
Yeah.
Like you're way better just saying, let's just assume it's not a good number and move on than actually giving them the number relevant and having it written there. What about linebackers? What have you got?
All right. My biggest winners from linebackers, you stole the biggest winner in my opinion, but Dorian Williams, the two-lane linebacker, 4.49, came in with over 33-inch arms, almost 230 pounds. Boom. Those are great numbers. He's a top 100 linebacker on the PFF board. I think his ability in coverage is probably top four in this draft class as just a pure cover player and has really, really broad shoulders, really massive wingspan. I think almost like a 6'10 wingspan. Like he is a uniquely built dude who I would love to see
you know, put in a weak side linebacker role that really just taps into that physical ability. So he's a winner. And then I think Dian Henley, who's PFF's LB1, to go 4.54, 35-inch vertical, 10.5 broad jump, basically just saying, you know, whatever you want him to do athletically, he is more than capable of.
Yeah, my winner was Jack Campbell from Iowa, who just put up like an impressive workout top to bottom. 4.65 in the 40, a 10-yard split under 1.6 seconds, 37.5-inch vertical, which is pretty crazy, at what he weigh in at 249 pounds, 10-foot-8 broad jump, 3-cone, 6.74. That's pretty crazy. Mm-hmm. And then a 4.24 short shuttle. So just elite workout top to bottom for a guy that can now count himself as amongst the best athletic linebackers you're going
to
see.
Yes, would not surprise me to see him go a lot higher than people have been kind of mocking him. Would not surprise me to see him go in the top 50. One awful linebacker class. Probably the worst linebacker class I've seen in the 9 years of PFF Creighton College. It's just, it's not good. Two, look at the weights of pretty much everyone else that tested the combine. Every guy we've mentioned besides him so far has been under 240 pounds. Or 230 pounds, excuse me. Like, this is a slight, light linebacker class. 249 is
prototype.
What everyone wants. You know, right. What the vast majority of defense at the NFL still want one of those guys at least. And Campbell is the lone guy, it seems like, in this draft class that can be that three down real between the tackle stumper.
Yeah, like the last time, the last show, we were talking about how the entire linebacker group is built like these stick insects. They're all tiny, thin, lean guys. And then you've got this 6'5", 250-pound, prototypical, walking stereotype of a linebacker who then goes out and posts insane workout numbers. So, yeah, absolutely. Do we have any losers for the linebacker group? And then we'll get on to a new position.
The only guy I'd really bill as a loser is probably Noah Sewell. I wasn't super high in his prospects to begin with. I think he's a really limited in terms of his what he can do in coverage. And they really took him out of coverage at Oregon on tape because he's just, like, he's a, truthfully, he's an edge rusher. Like, that is what he does best. And it would not surprise me if that's where he ultimately falls in the NFL, despite, you know, having a weird build by edge rusher standards. I mean, he's basically built like Micah Parsons, right? 6'1", 246, 31.5-inch arms. That's Micah Parsons.
Only with bad weight.
But yes, but again, like that, but he's not carrying the way Parsons did. He's not as athletic as Parsons is. And I worry about him in coverage because of those things. But 4.64, 33-inch vert, 27 benches reps is nice. But
I always think it's kind of weird when sort of siblings or close blood relatives of guys that played one position play a completely different position, you know, that involves radically different body types when they don't necessarily have that. Like, you can see how Noah Sewell and Penei Sewell are related, and yet one of them is an offensive tackle and the other one is trying to like masquerade as an off-the-ball linebacker. It's like, that's not really, that body type does not transform into an off-the-ball linebacker body type without some fairly radical changes.
Yeah.
And you don't appear to have made that many radical changes. You're just like a smaller version of the other guy trying to play a position that's not really going to function. So, it kind of looks like a guy that doesn't actually belong at that spot. Trying to get it done. All right, new positions. This is what we haven't talked about yet. DBs.
Yes, sir.
Where are you going?
My biggest winner, I mean,
you got like a ton of these.
Throw a dart. Throw a dart at this cornerback class. And we've raved about how good this corner class is and that it's one of the best I've seen, one of the deepest at minimum. Maybe I don't think I'd put any guy, any one prospect in the realm of what I put Sauce and Stingley last year. I think those were two special prospects that are probably a little bit above even, you know, Devon Witherspoon, who's CB1 PFS board this year. But there were probably then about five or six guys who are then right in that tier after them as prospects that are just like damn good. And they showed it at the combine. Whether it's Deontay Banks, who went like 4.35 with a, 42-inch vertical and 11.4 broad jump at 197 pounds. Just an all-time athlete at that size. Cam Smith, I thought, really helped himself with his times. He probably came in with more question marks about his athleticism than anyone of the top corners in this draft class. And 4.43 is nothing like special, but I thought that was a good time for him. But then the explosive drills, he went, you know, 38-inch vertical, 11.2 broad jump. Those are great. Those are great figures for a guy that, you know, people maybe were trying to move to the slot. Well, shit, I think he can play outside still. Julius Brents from Kansas State, you know, over 11-foot broad, one of the best broads, one of the best verticals of anyone in attendance, and has like 34-inch arms. box ticker. That's a great number for him. He's probably going middle of day two now. Joey Porter, 34-inch arms, runs in the 4.4s. I thought he was going to be a 4.5s guy. Great for him.
Yeah.
And then that, so the corner class, just those guys, again, pretty much any single one who tested probably did themselves some favors.
My biggest winner was Christian Gonzalez from Oregon. Would he have been in your winners
list
if I had stolen him?
Yeah.
He, so obviously his workout numbers are kind of crazy, right? He measures in 6 foot one, 197 pounds, 4.38, so under 4.4, 1.54 10-yard split. That's really fast. 41.5-inch vertical, over 11 feet in the broad jump. Like, those are insane, elite, explosive numbers. But this, when you get to the drills as well, there were two people, I think, that stood out during the entire week for me, where they embodied the word smooth and fluid as an athlete. Like, they just move with zero effort. And that was Christian Gonzalez. Even when you just watch him run his 40, there were some guys out there. What's the TCU's quarterback's name? Max Duggan. Max Duggan looked like Ryan Fitzpatrick trying to run a 40, right? The guy's life force was being spent on that 40-yard dash. Mm-hmm. That took 5 years off his life. Like, that running that 40 ended that guy's life prematurely by 5 years. Christian Gonzalez looked like nothing. Like, zero effort was put into that. And I mean that in a good way. Like, it didn't faze him. He was just able to glide down that 40 and run under 4.4 flat. And every single drill was the same way. Like, he just looked, there was zero wasted movement. It was smooth, it was easy, it was fluid. There's something about those athletes where if you're just able to move like that and make that kind of stuff look easy, I think that's a good sign. And he was the guy that stood out for me on the DB side of things.
Yeah, he really did. I think what the craziest number, though, of any of the corners that I saw came from Travius Hodges Tomlinson, who an 11-foot broad jump, it wasn't like an elite number by, you know, corner standards.
When you're 5'9",
it is. 5'8". He's 5'8". When you're 5'8", like, Deuce Vaughn had like a 9-something-7 broad jump.
Right.
Because just like, when you're small, your legs don't go as far out in front of you. To be 5'8", to fly 11 feet, almost, you know, like, two of your bodies through the air is insane. It's insane. So that number, so Travis Hodges Thompson helped himself as well.
What about losers for DBs?
Okay. Losers for DBs, I think the safety class. Now, I think Quan Martin, Sidney Brown, the two Illinois DBs, two Illinois safeties, Quan more of a slot, Sidney more of like versatile dude. They helped themselves. They put up great explosive numbers, but pretty much everyone else who tested. Brian Branch ran slow, although I don't think that changed anything. I didn't think he was ever fast. But Jair Brown ran really slow in the 4.6s. Christopher Smith, the Georgia safety, who's like billed for his range, ran in the 4.6s. Antonio Johnson had a really bad vertical, really bad broad jump for a guy who's kind of supposed to be an explosive player around the line of scrimmage. Jamie Robinson also ran slow, high 4.5s, nothing impressive. 33.5-inch vertical, 9.8 broad jump. Like, none of those guys were athletic, which is a little concerning and kind of backs up that this is not a banner safety class by any means.
Yeah, I think we'll probably talk about this a little bit in certain specific cases. But generally, one of the important things from the combine is like not to double count the athleticism, sort of the revealing of the true athleticism using these sort of numbers. If there's a guy that you already knew was not athletic, you don't like double count the fact that he's now proven to be not athletic. You already know this. This was just reaffirming what we already thought. Similarly, if you knew a guy was an incredible athlete, the fact that he then proves it with the numbers, don't double count it. You already knew the guy was special. It doesn't increase the importance that is. It's just reaffirming what you thought one way or the other. And then the flip side of that is the guys where I think it's most important are the ones where it's different to either what you thought or what you needed to see, you know, given a certain body type or size or whatever. So Nolan Smith needed to have that kind of workout because you knew he was that small. So one of the losers for the DBs for me is Clark Phillips, the Utah corner, who, you know, 5'9", 185-ish, 4.51, 40 is not good when you're that small. The 10-yard split was pretty good, but 33-inch vertical isn't great. 4.32 short shuttle isn't good. Like, these are times and numbers that you need to be better if you're going to be that kind of size working against, you know, NFL wide receivers.
Yes, there's just not a strong track record. He said, undersized and unathletic.
Yeah, that's
a problem. And so I had worries about his tape already because his size was an issue. I mean, I thought it showed up at times. Like, he'd be at the catch point, be in good position, and there's nothing you can do when you're 5'9", 180 a lot of times. So I worried about that. And then to go the time he did, there's just not a, again, like I said, not a strong track record of slower and undersized corners sticking on the outside. So it's probably a slot, which I don't think it matters nearly as much there. And it's not like a derogatory thing in today's NFL to be like, oh, he's just a slot.
Right.
But once you're taking things off a guy's plate, right, that he can do from a prospect perspective, you're just limiting, kind of pigeonholing yourself into like, oh, he has to be good at this one thing or else I have no options.
All right, let's get on to quarterbacks. Now, you have no winners or losers for the quarterback position.
That is correct. Because the combine doesn't mean absolute shit for the quarterback position. It doesn't mean shit.
Okay, so.
There's nothing that I saw that changes my opinion on any of these guys.
I think that's fair, but let me give you, it's not even a counterpoint. It's actually contradictory to almost everything I just said 5 minutes ago. But that being said, let me explain to you why I think there are winners or losers.
Okay.
Number one, Anthony Richardson. He's going to be talked about as one of the winners of this combine. Put up insane workout numbers at an insane size, reinforced everything we thought about him in terms of freakish ability. Where I think it changes things for me, though, is remember before the combine, it's like this guy's a mix of Cam Newton and Justin Fields. Like, mm-hmm. That's absurd and ridiculous. And my biggest problem with that is, like, Cam Newton was a visible freak every time he stepped onto the field. He was bigger than defensive ends that were trying to chase him down and faster than those guys. And every stage of football he ever played in his life, he was the biggest, freakiest athlete in the room and therefore was a dominant force, almost mm-hmm. independent of what he was able to do passing the football. I didn't really see that with Richardson on my first look at the guy's tape. It's like, obviously he's a freak athlete, but he's not Cam Newton. Well, it turns out, from a workout point of view, he is.
Yeah.
And actually, he's faster than Cam Newton at the same kind of size. Like, he's basically the same weight, an inch shorter. Mm-hmm. I didn't really see that. And now I'm kind of like, maybe I do need to reassess, like, just how freaky he is, and therefore what that means for his floor in the NFL, because I'm actually starting to think now that he's almost the opposite player that everybody is talking about him as, right? He's being characterized as a really low floor and high ceiling guy, mm-hmm. massive range of outcomes. And actually, if he's that level of freak athlete, you might be talking about a guy who has a really high floor, but maybe the ceiling isn't as high because the thing that's a problem is accuracy. And okay, Josh Allen fixed that, but most people don't.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a generally inaccurate quarterback, even if he is pretty good from a process standpoint and maybe more of a sort of fundamental passer than people are giving him credit for, that still probably puts a cap on how good you can be. But if you're that freaky an athlete, it's almost impossible to stink.
Yes. Yes. I've been saying that one for a while, that I would draft him, and this was like a little corollary, but like, if he just said he wanted to play another position, I'd take him in the first round. I don't really care what position it is. He's just like that.
Right, if he was just an athlete, like the college recruiting stuff.
Exactly. He's a five-star athlete. Like, this guy is. That's what you're drafting him as, to a degree. But it gives you a high floor when you are that dynamic. You can run. You can run the triple option with him, and it'd be tough to stop play after play. So, yeah, I do think he's – like you said, being billed a little incorrectly, because he does, he is going to be tough to stop, even if he doesn't complete a pass next year. But hard to call him winner, because I already felt that way. And I guess his Instagram followers probably a winner. His social media presence is a big winner. But
to me, like,
it doesn't change how I rank him. I still think he's.
I think that's
the fourth
fair. And obviously, you're way deeper into the tape and stuff mm-hmm. than I am. But for me, it sort of changed how I was crediting him with that stuff. Like, obviously I knew he was an impressive athlete, but that workout and those measurables to me are like, actually this guy is in a different category than maybe you were giving him credit for. And that does change things. Mm-hmm. Like, if he is that special an athlete, cause I think over the last few years, over a while now, you're starting to kind of see that guys that are genuinely special athletes, it does change how – it just changes the rules. Like, Justin Fields being able to be as fast and freaky as he is, gives him time. Like, if the Bears go with him again, it's because he's that freaky an athlete. Cam Newton, obviously, everything we've seen from him. Josh Allen being as good as he was, he stank as a passer for a couple of years, but had the time because he could do all that stuff.
Yeah.
Jalen Hurts as well. And apparently he's a way more impressive athlete than Jalen Hurts is, and they were able to basically build a rushing offense off the back of that. So the fact that he was that special, like, I think changes his entire outlook.
I will just say, though, on field, the throwing portion, he was bad.
he was
all over the place.
And
he did not look like he was fixed.
Right, and it didn't help that he was right next to C.J. Stroud, who made everything look easy. Yeah. Like, he had the throwing equivalent of the Christian Gonzalez, Bijan Robinson smoothness. Like, just everything was drop back, smooth, easy.
Yeah.
I would almost put him as a winner in terms of, I mean, we knew this already, but he did show the difference between him and, like, the other guys that worked out from just how easy he made throwing the football accurately look.
And I think his arm looked a little liver than I even gave him credit for. He was putting his deep ball, was going toe-to-toe in terms of just, like, distance and velocity with Anthony Richardson.
Right. It didn't – the one thing is that it didn't look like Richardson
tried.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was – they were sort of terming that drill, you know, like the Josh Allen drill. Because that was kind of where it first showed up. Josh Allen, like, took an age and then just unleashed one just to show how far he could throw it. Everybody in this drill kind of felt more like they were just trying to go for accuracy. Whereas I think they have three shots at those, the true go ball.
Mm-hmm.
All right, the first two, let's go for accuracy and pretty and showing you what we could do. The third one, like, let's just...
Yeah, that's what they did. Richardson did that. Stroud was definitely, I mean, trying to show off the arm. Like, he was taking a nice little crow hop. But I think that's the difference between Richardson, Levis's arm talent versus Stroud's, is that those guys just, like, it comes out.
Richardson just flicks it.
They don't even have it. Levis doesn't change his release no matter what the throw is.
Yeah.
He's the same, like, tight, and that's why they can spin it real nice to intermediate level with, like, a little more juice than I think Stroud does.
So I think Levis was kind of a loser from this whole thing. For the throwing portion. So he was obviously going to throw. He said he used that term because he's got a cannon and he wants to show it off. He felt like when he was doing all the different throwing drills, it was almost like, I've heard that the biggest criticism of me is a lack of variance in my throws. So I'm going to vary them at random here just to show that I have, like, other clubs in the bag. But it's like it was independent of what the throw was.
Actual concept, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, each one of these throws is already designed to make you vary the throw by the route. And he was like, just, it was like a randomizer as to what throw was going to come out based, you know, independent of what the route was being run. I'm like, that's not helping. Like, this is not showing everybody that you have this wide variety of throws. This is like, do you know what you're doing here?
I did think it looked accurate, more accurate than Richardson for sure. And probably more accurate than he's, like, was given credit for on tape. But obviously it's a controlled environment. If you don't look accurate there, you're in trouble. Like, that's why Anthony Richardson is still, like, I still QB4 because dude misses an insane amount of throws. 53% completion is a tough pill to swallow.
It is, and that's his biggest issue. Is like, we need to do the Josh Allen thing to him. We need to figure out if we can teach him how to be accurate from a very low baseline.
Mm-hmm. And I've heard a lot of people say it's fixable, and there are things that can get cleaned up, and I expect it to improve. But I think it's a far cry to expect him to look anything like Josh Allen, though, in terms of, like, the fix that he has gone through. Because
and it took him 3 years.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah.
That's the other thing is, it might be fixable, but is it going to take you 3 years of working with an independent, you know, private QB coach for that to happen? Do you even get 3 years to get to that point if you're bad from a passing standpoint? Like, it's not easy, even if it is achievable. All right, wide receivers.
Winners. I had a few winners.
Okay.
I thought Rashee Rice was a big winner.
Let's go.
For him to go 41 inches in the vertical at 204 pounds, 10.8 broad jump, and my favorite, though, was the 1.49-10 split. Get off the line of scrimmage. Now, obviously somewhat inexperienced versus press in that show at the Senior Bowl, but I think it's there.
Yeah.
You know, that shows that explosiveness, that suddenness is there for him to do so.
SMU wide receiver, he is a fascinating mix. He's a fascinating mix of tools to me. Like, I think if you're looking for those kind of mid-round guys that have the ability to be something better than they are right now, he's one. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a guy I would be really interested in in the mid rounds. It's a project. There's a lot of work to do, but there's definitely the capacity for that guy to be a good quality starting NFL wide receiver.
Yeah. Next winner, I thought Marvin Mims, the Oklahoma wide receiver. All those speed wide receivers, you know, we're thinking some fast guys in this class.
This was
turns out none of them were fast.
This was not a fast class of wide receivers.
Except Marvin Mims, 4.38, great vert, great three cone there, 6.9. So when no one runs the three cone anymore. So big fan of his day. I thought Quentin Johnston kind of just put his nuts on the table and said, you know, I am a different dude than anyone else here. Because 208 pounds is size that no one in this class, at least the top guys, can't come close to matching. And then a 40.5-inch vertical and 11.2 broad jump are just stupid numbers for a guy that big. I thought Michael Wilson really helped himself, the Stanford wide receiver. Now,
I like his tape. Only went
4.58, not fast.
No.
Knew that. But a 1.5-10 split at 213 pounds is, again, what it takes to get off the line of scrimmage. And he did 23 bench press reps, which is a big number for a wide receiver. So
almost got to the 24th, I think.
He helped himself. And then Josh Downs, I think, helped himself. In a class full of smaller dudes, as we've been banging the table, you know, this is a tiny, tiny wide receiver class. Yes, he's tiny, but I think he was the best tester of the tiny guys. 4.48 is a good time for him. 1.49-10 split, great time for him. 38.5-inch vertical and 10.11 broad. So, yeah,
Josh felt like he helped himself just relative to the other small receivers.
Yeah, it's like by comparison.
Almost the one guy that sort of didn't let himself down as opposed to really helping himself. Uh-huh. I think the biggest winner was Jackson Smith and Jigba.
But then, yes.
Didn't run the 40. Is Ohio State a fast track, by the way? Because I think
it's
only
the fastest
guys
of the fast tracks. Beanie Wells. Okay. Beanie fucking Wells ran a 4.36 reportedly at Ohio State's track. These one of the worst, least athletic linebackers I've ever seen. So it is.
So
it
is. I think the only Ohio State prospect that ran a 40 at Indy as opposed to waiting for their pro day was DeJuan Jones. Simply because I'm going to run a 5.3. What the hell? Like, it doesn't matter. Yeah. Who cares? As long as I just get it out of the way and be done. Everybody else is waiting for their pro day. So Smith and Jigba didn't run the 40, but posted like all-time special change of direction numbers.
Yeah.
6.57 three cone, 3.93 short shuttle, and then the jump numbers were pretty good. 35-inch vertical, 10.5-foot broad jump. Like, that's not only did he post like all-time change of direction numbers, but the stuff he was talking about on the podiums and things, like the receivers he focuses on when he's watching tape are the guys that know how to run routes. So not only can he just beat you by change of direction anyway, but he also knows how to sell it so you're taking a false step so that the separation works even better. I mean, that whatever the 40 time ends up being, those numbers are where he's going to thrive at the next level.
And not to toot my own horn here, but my comp the draft guy from is Julian Edelman. And to get by being that kind of wide receiver, like a 5'10", well built, you know, 195 is Julian Edelman coming out, 190 in the 190s for Jackson Jigba. You better and not have that speed, vertical threat element really to his game, which is, you know, what the knock is on JSN. You better be an elite change of direction athlete. You better just be able to be as sudden as can be and untouchable in that regard over the middle of the field. Julian Edelman, 3.92 short shuttle, 6.62 three cone. Almost identical numbers, those two. I think that's just the player you're getting. You're getting ultra reliable, ultra-talented route runner over the middle of the field that, as we've seen, like, when those guys get featured, they're unstoppable, basically.
And it's also why I think that he can play on the outside. Like, I don't think he's just going to be a slot guy. Yeah. Like, Edelman was not Wes Welker 2.0. Mm-hmm. Edelman played outside a lot and didn't have problems doing it because of all that kind of change of direction, quickness, foot speed, the ability to get away from a dude trying to jam him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, how I would kind of describe it is you want to draft him if you run a lot of 11 personnel. If you run a lot of three wide, you'll covet him highly. That's probably where he's going to go just because of how the draft works. But if you, when you go to two wide receiver sets, he's not coming off the field.
Right. Yeah. What about losers?
Losers, there were a few. I think the biggest one, though, has to be Jordan Addison.
So I've seen a lot of people say that. Why do you have Addison on here? Because he felt like another one of those guys where, like, I didn't expect him to run fast.
Yeah. Shows up lighter, 173 than he's listed. You would expect a guy who has been listed at 175 since back to his time at Pittsburgh to have, you know, gotten bigger. Like, that's how it's usually how it goes in college. You put on muscle mass. He obviously hasn't. Comes in with kind of a tight frame, you know, under 31-inch arms. Not a guy that you'd expect to make a lot of plays outside his body. And then 34-inch vertical, 10-2 broad jump. Those are below average numbers for a wide receiver. And 1.56-10 split's also like not good. So again, it goes back to when you're a size outlier on the low end, you better have something to back it up. So it just brings up question marks about how his game will translate at that size more than I would have, more than you'd like, I'll say.
Yeah, I think almost all this was not a good workout for the wide receivers. Mm-hmm. I think collectively the entire group was not good. So I think I generally there was a lot of losers, but I don't think there was a bigger one than Kayshon Boutte from LSU.
I saw you had that. I was like, yeah, that one was obvious.
I mean, just terrible. Like a 4.5 guy, a 29-inch vertical for an NFL – a guy who wants to be an NFL wide receiver. If the first number in your vertical is a 2, that's ridiculous. Like that's embarrassing. A 9-foot, 10-inch broad jump, 4-2, like just a terrible workout.
Yeah, that was – I mean, I think he opted out this past fall, but just kept showing up still. You know, like he did nothing. Like on tape, he was truthfully, he was checked out. The dude put up low effort tape.
And this is a guy who's like, who's still claiming that like, oh, I'm the best wide receiver in this draft. You know what I mean? Like you can't.
And he was nasty as a freshman. Like legitimately, I had him coming into this year after his sophomore tape as wide receiver one, because he was that good and that explosive and just a different player entirely this year.
Yeah.
I mean, hard to watch.
I don't know. He had better have some pretty amazing interviews. Otherwise, his stock feels like it's sinking like a brick.
Yeah, I am worried about him. I had one more loser. Jaden Reed, the Michigan State wide receiver. I watched his tape, and there's like a lot to like. There's not a lot of negatives, I'll say, on Jaden Reed's tape. But I just kept going back. I'm like, why don't I like it more, though? Like, why isn't it? Because yeah, I think he runs good routes. I think he's pretty crisp. I think he's pretty like well-rounded in his skill set. But I think the testing really showed why I wasn't higher. He's just a below-average athlete for his size. You know, for a 187-pound wide receiver, for a guy on the smaller end, a 4.45, 33.5-inch vertical, 10.1 broad jumper, just like, and 1.57, 10 splitter, just that's just not enough to get away from NFL corners, in my opinion, when that's kind of your selling point is your athlete.
Let's move on to tight ends, because this is actually a really fun group, and I think they looked really good during this drill. I know Daniel Jeremiah was saying this is the best tight end group in a decade. It kind of looks that way as well.
Yeah.
My biggest winner, Iowa tight end Sam Laporta.
Has to be.
Who I did not like from tape. I watched the dude's tape, and I was like, okay, if you can get the ball in his hands, he's amazing. But he's bad at everything required for that to happen. His route running isn't good. His hands aren't good. Like, remember Michael Bennett, the Vikings running back?
Yeah.
Michael Bennett was amazing with the ball in his hands in space, but he was bad at everything required to get to that point, so it was useless. It's like, I can't get you the ball in space for you to then take advantage of it, so this is a waste of everybody's time. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how I felt with Sam Laporta. But then he goes out there for the workout. One, I think, measured bigger than he was supposed to be, right? He found an extra inch in height. He was 6'4", 245. But then he looked so smooth. Like, his movement was fluid. His catching was good. He caught the ball well. Like, it didn't look like he was fighting it the way he did on his tape sometimes. And just sort of generally put the kind of performance together, independent of the workout numbers, just from the drills, that made me go, I'm going to need to go back to that guy's tape and figure out why it wasn't as good in game. Yeah. But like that showed that he has the skill set to be that guy.
Yeah, he's very interesting because I didn't see this caliber of athlete on tape. I think he was a good athlete for sure, but I didn't see, like, he tested out better than Luke Musgrave, the Oregon State tight end, who everyone was, you know, billing as the freak in this draft class. And Musgrave still tested well, and I still truly believe he is a unique dude that you can do some different things with. But Laporta as well. I think he's immediately going to be an upper echelon tight end in the NFL in terms of with the ball in his hands. He was right up there with Dalton Kincaid in this class, maybe even better than Kincaid just in terms of his after the catch ability. He broke 20 tackles and 58 catches this year. He is special in that regard for sure. So the route tree that is usually how tight ends are featured in the league is a lot of run after catch stuff. It's a lot of that. And so
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Am I going to, you know, you're going to have a debate in the second round. Are you going to want to go, maybe Luke Musgrave's on the board, maybe Sam Laporte is also on the board, and Musgrave doesn't break tackles. That's not his game. He's just a vertical threat, tight end position. A lot of teams might lean Laporte in that conversation now.
And then the other guy that I think probably changed fundamentally how I view him was Darnell Washington from Georgia.
Okay.
Now,
I'm going to push back.
I don't believe his height thing. I think, I don't know how, but
he's got the hair on top.
They've undersold him. The man is easily 6'7". I flat out refuse to believe any measurement that has him under 6'7". 264 pounds. Now, he's getting comped a lot to Mercedes Lewis for similar reasons. You know, giant sort of freak body tight end and is primarily a blocker, effectively, because of that. I thought he moved better than that. I thought he showed that he, and obviously had one of the most spectacular random ass catches in the drills.
Like
he had
the end zone fade thing
where he just one hand plucks it out of the air and taps the feet down. But I thought he moved better than a guy that is supposed to be just this sort of leaden footed giant freak inline blocking sixth offensive lineman guy. I thought he showed that like that guy can actually do some stuff in the passing game for you.
See, I push back. Okay. I think he's the most overrated tight end in this draft class.
Well, I guess it depends where you're rating him. Like, yeah. I came into this sort of thinking, I don't really want that guy on my team.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't.
That's
fair. I mean, it's not like I wouldn't have him as an undrafted grade or anything, but, like, I wouldn't be drafting him very high at all. But all of a sudden, I'm like, from those drills, I'm like, all right, maybe he can actually be part of your passing game and be useful.
That's, on tape, though, he doesn't get open on his own. Like, he's a schemed open guy.
Right.
Which, again, I just touched on, like, a lot of tight end routes are not.
Yeah.
You don't have to beat a guy. You just have to be kind of fast and have a big catch radius. And so he can do those things, but you just, I mean, any of the highlights they showed on that you'll ever see from Darnell Washington, it is not him putting a move on a linebacker to get open. It's not him beating a safety one-on-one. It is him running an over route, running a crossing route, gets the ball in his hands. Oh, it looks awesome because he's fucking huge, 7-foot wingspan. I mean, the guy is unique for sure. But just what does that ceiling get to? You know, how much is just those routes and not being particularly dynamic? He can, you know, it looks cool when he does break tackles after the catch, but you're not going to rely on him
so. I don't think his ceiling is through the roof or anything, but it just sort of fundamentally changed how I view that guy from like Mercedes Lewis, right now. He is effectively a blocker, and then every now and again, Aaron Rodgers finds him for a 25-yard pass. And it's like, oh, look at this guy. He's 20 years still in the league, blah, blah, blah. Like, that was sort of how I was viewing him going into this. And now it's like, actually, you know, he could be a useful tight end in your offense more than just, like, one catch every 2 weeks.
Yeah, so Mercedes Lewis tapped out at 700 yards as a career high in 2010, the only time he's ever gone over 600. Like, that's – that. Like, what's that worth? It's like, I'm more pushing back on, like – that being a first-round player.
No, I wouldn't.
Don't think he's ever good. If that's what you're getting, that's not a first-round
player. No, I wouldn't take him anywhere near the first round. Yeah. But I was talking about him before that as like a day three dude that maybe I'd spend a late-round pick on. Yeah. Now I'm like, middle of the round. Round somewhere.
I think loser, the tight end position, though. Michael Mayer.
Yes.
To 4'7 is where I expected, but I expected him to be like 260.
I was
going to
say,
4'7.
Where did the weight go?
249. Again, like, blocking is still an explosive and strength-based thing. Whether you're 249 or 265, if all it is, the difference is fat, you're not doing yourself. It's not that you'd rather not have the fat, truthfully. So if you did just shed that, more power to him, that's where you'd rather him be. But that's still a below-average athlete, no matter how you want to slice it, compared to the elites at the position. It's more than good enough to be a, you know, guy that gets a somewhat featured role in your offense, but it's never going to be Travis Kelce.
I did not love his tape when I went to watch it. I went in to the tight end position expecting to think that Kincaid was being overrated and Mayer is actually the guy that you want out of this as the all-rounder tight end, the guy that's good at everything. And I ended up coming out of it going, Kincaid is way better than Mayer. Okay, Mayer's a better blocker, but Kincaid is so much better in the passing game. Yeah, and when you watch Mayer's tape, most of his wins are like, he's just bigger than people. So, okay, that's fine. That works. Like, I was kind of getting Gronk light feel from his tape. But then if you come out and you're like, you suddenly lose a bunch of that weight, and it turns out you're not 260-something, you're only 249, and you're only 6'4.5", as opposed to 6'5", 6'6", like, and your workout numbers are pedestrian. Well, now you're just a guy who's not a marginal athlete, but not a good athlete, who isn't winning through athleticism, is winning through size, and it turns out your size has been kind of overrated, and all of a sudden, like, how are you winning at the next level?
Yeah, I mean, just option rounds, right? That's how he's going to have to win.
Yeah.
He is laterally agile, and obviously unfortunately didn't get testing in that regard, which is surprising, because that's where I'd expect him to shine. I mean, he can put his foot in the ground and run it out, run it in, better than probably, you know, anyone in this draft class.
Yeah.
And he can use his size better than anyone in this draft class. So, like, there's that aspect to his game that is useful, but he's not going to be.
So I still think he's a good player.
Expectations are just a little too high.
Right. I still think he's a good player, but I've kind of totally changed on just how good. Mm-hmm. Like, I think the gap between him and Kincaid as the number one tight end in the class is significant, and I actually think it's a closer run thing for him at number three than it is him at number one.
I will say, though, so Kyle Pitts, obviously the last tight end to go first round. Different
doesn't really count. Yeah.
But I think he's a better version of TJ Hockenson, who went top 10. They both ran 4.7s. I would, in that conversation, if you're debating those two prospects, I think Mayer's far superior.
The other tight end that I just want to mention, I haven't even looked at the dude's tape yet, but he was impressing me in the workouts, was the Miami tight end, whose name is
Will Mallory?
Yes. Will Mallory, I thought, had a really good workout. Again, similar to Laporta, it just looked smooth, looked good, caught the ball well. It just looked good at everything he was doing.
Yeah, Mallory had a great testing day for himself, but he's 239 pounds. He's probably the biggest tweener in this class, in that, like, he either needs to put on 10 pounds of muscle or shed 15 pounds of fat to play in the NFL. What he showed up at is just – he's unplayable as a blocker right now. So,
yeah, though I think, you know – okay, so his PFF grades aren't great either. There's not a lot to love about him other than the how he looked just randomly running drills. Yeah. But still, I thought
that's what you take day three, right?
I thought he was aggressive in the workout.
You'd rather take that guy day three than a guy who has reliable hands.
Yeah.
Does the right things.
Those guys are kind of interesting to me as well, like, particularly when you're coming at from a position of ignorance, which I often am. Mm-hmm. And I have no experience of a lot of these guys. And anyone that just sort of stands out from any kind of workout or movement point of view, I think it's an interesting guy to go watch the tape more, figure out if there is anything there, or if the dude just had a randomly good workout. All right, running backs. What do you got?
Running backs, another one where, kind of like the cornerback class, where they all really solidified that, hey, this is a special class, that we are all good prospects here. And so Jahmyr Gibbs going 4.36, I thought was great for his draft stock. That is a, you know.
Wasn't he being talked about as a guy that could get into the 4.2s? Or am I making that up?
Maybe he's, you know, I'm not going to say no.
Right.
Because anyone that run, you know, Jalen Reagor was claiming he could get in the 4.2s.
True.
And ran like a 4.4 or something. So I'm not going to put it past him, but I never saw it on tape. While the two guys I had pegged to maybe get in the 4.2s was A-Chain and then Keaton Mitchell. Both going in the 4.3s. They're both, you know, speed is obvious for both those guys. But Gibbs, I thought, really helped himself. I thought Chase Brown helped himself. 4.3, the explosive, you know, 40-inch vert, 10.7 broad. Those are great numbers. And I thought Zach Charbonnet was the other one that, with speed question marks, to go 4.53 is a really good time for him. And then to have 37-inch vertical and 10.2 broad, like, he is pretty much everything you saw on tape, you can feel good about translating out to the NFL.
So running back, excuse me, running back for me is one of the positions where I'm almost, not more interested, but I get the most, I think, out of the actual position drills that they do during the game versus the 40, the vert, and all that kind of thing. So I don't really want to put Bijan as a winner because, truth be told, I would have liked to see a slightly faster 40, all those kind of things. But he operated on a completely different plane of just smooth moving to anybody else that was there that day. Mm-hmm. Like, It's so visible. The comp I keep coming back to for him, I had a Christian McCaffrey one at one point. Christian McCaffrey led me to Priest Holmes because I comped those two guys together when they were coming out. But actually, I'm starting to settle on LaDainian Tomlinson the more I watch of Bijan. Like, just a guy who embodies, it's almost like if you were designing a running back to operate with like 100% textbook technique and everything.
Yeah.
That's who you end up with. And LaDainian Tomlinson was that guy when he played. And now Bijan Robinson is that guy. Like, he's just so good and smooth at everything. And it was so visible when they did the drills. Like, he,
yeah.
Other, you know, these other guys, it's like crazy movement and like it's erratic. They're just about hanging in control. Everything he does is with 100% control and zero effort.
I know you're not supposed to comp to Hall of Famers. Like, that's a easy way to get clowned. But LT was a prospect like this when he was coming. You know, like LT was probably the next Marshall Faulk or whatever. You know,
right.
Like, the Bijan, to say that, like, there is a lot of similarities. And when you're, you know, that caliber of prospect, that how Bijan's being talked about, I think you can go to that level and it not be ridiculous. You can go to the Hall of Fame level.
I mean, he's already being talked about as, you know, the best prospect since Adrian Peterson or whatever. Mm-hmm. So that's already going back like 15 years. You might as well go the whole hog and say, well, stylistically, he looks a lot like LT.
Yeah.
You know, if he's that good and he looks a lot like LT, we're already talking about something pretty special.
I agree.
So this one, I'll be interested to get your take in on. So 100% recency bias here. But I've decided that there is something to running backs in particular that move with a certain level of reckless abandon and violence to their game. And I think that's why Isaiah Pacheco was successful this year. Like, he runs, like, every single carry is the last play he's going to get in the NFL, and you better use it up now because it's gone from here on in. And I think there's a certain degree to which that just has success. If you're a good enough athlete and you're going to play at this level anyway, if you then show up wanting it more than everyone else and just prepared to physically batter people that just want to make a damn tackle, you're going to bust through some gaps and you're going to make some plays. Daenerys Prince from Tulsa, everything he did yesterday was like that.
Yeah.
The dude just ran with this sort of violence to him. And I'm like, all right, the PFF grade isn't great. The stats aren't amazing. I've just decided that's going to play. I just watched it play, so I've decided now that it's going to play for him too.
I will say this. There is a distinct difference about how running backs break tackles at the collegiate level versus how they break tackles in the NFL. You will see a lot of guys make defenders actually miss in college. Like, miss altogether, get one hand on you, whatever. The amount of times that happens in the NFL is so rare that it's almost not even worth, like, you touting that skill, especially at running back, when, you know, probably 95% of your carries, you're just not out in space with a one-on-one that you could make a guy miss. Like, it's just it's a rarity to do. And so a lot of tackle breaking in the NFL has to come via actual contact. Like, you're getting contacted, you have to play through that contact, and you have to be able to run through it. So running hard and the way you break tackles, like, Jonathan Taylor wasn't really noted for his tackle breaking at Wisconsin, but he breaks tackles the way you have to break tackles in the NFL, which is one cut, explode, guy hits your thighs, and it doesn't matter. That's like kind of how you have to do it. You can't just make guys miss altogether. You can't just be this shifty guy out in space who's going to juke guys. Now, there are some that can survive on that, but it's a far, far rarer occasion than the Pachecos of the world, who maybe he's not elusive, maybe he's not going to make you miss, but he's going to put his nose down and run through a lot more tackles than your run-of-the-mill, you know, 215-pounder who runs a little more timidly.
Is that an endorsement or?
That's an endorsement. Okay. Yeah, that was a long way.
You're on board. You're on board. Ish.
Yeah.
All right. One other winner I had. This is, see if you like this one. Evan Hull from Northwestern.
Yeah.
And the reason why, every rep that he had, including the 40-yard dashes, he took to the house. He finished in the end zone. So whatever the rep was, wherever it was supposed to end, he ran it all the way through the end zone. And I bet there is an NFL team out there that loves that. That
Bill.
Loves that. That's like, that's competitiveness. That's what we want. That level of going above and beyond. Get that guy in the building this second. I don't care if he can play football. That's the kind of attitude we want in this building.
Yeah, feels like a Patriot.
I guarantee that like secured him a draft spot from somebody.
No, I mean, I bet he gets drafted, though. He looked good at the Senior Bowl and looked good on the field drills, too.
Okay. And then the other guy I thought that stood out, again, just from the sort of movement drills, Tajay Spears from Tulane. He just looked smooth again, like almost like a Bijan light, where everything just looked easy for him.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Tajay Spears. I think he's top 100 back. And if you're top 100 back on the PFF board.
Right,
PFF. You're a pretty good back. Last year, I think there was only three. It was obviously Walker and Breece and then Damian Pierce. So if you're top 100 back, that's a stamp of approval that you should be starting in the league.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't happen easy with PFF. Mm-hmm. All right, offensive lineman, the last position group. It wasn't actually the last position group to work out, but it wasn't the last day. So who are your winners?
I thought Peter Skoronski really helped himself. A 34.5-inch vertical and 9.7 broad jump are elite times. And especially considering, you know, early in his career, I think it was more when he had play strength concerns, but he showed up 313. That's not undersized by any means. And 32 1/4-inch arms is obviously the biggest number probably coming away from him for the combine.
Which was what it was supposed to be, right? He'd been measured somewhere before, and that was the number that
they hadn't shrunk.
Right. They hadn't shrunk.
And that puts him right on par with, I believe, Braden Smith for, you know, capable of playing tackle in today's NFL. So I think that's where he stays, and I think that's where he's getting evaluated.
I will say that, you know, when you just sort of – when they just put the camera on him, right, here's Skoronski doing a drill – he does just look like a guard, just from a body makeup composition. If you just saw a picture of this guy and said, where does he play in the NFL? You'd be like, he's a guard. He plays guard. That's what you would gravitate to. I would say guard before I said tackle. Now, doesn't mean he can't play outside and tackle, but just from that immediate, like, abstract snapshot, you definitely got guard vibes out of him.
That's why he's obviously getting. Said or getting rumored, not rumored, just like that it exists because that is a, like, at guard, he could be special, is the phrasing.
Which I think is probably a reasonable conversation after, you know, the Quentin Nelson sort of thing. Like, we were kind of making the same point of why not try him at tackle because it's a more valuable thing. But if the difference is you will be amazing at guard and okay at tackle, like Zach Martin as well. Zach Martin can obviously play right tackle in the NFL. He's done it. Like, he's had to kick out and play there. He is a capable starting tackle in the NFL, but he's the best guard in the league over the last decade. So which is more valuable to you? Even if the tackle is a more valuable position, the difference in your capacity to do it is significant and probably does change that math.
Someone do that math for me. I don't want to figure it out.
Yeah, I mean, that's a job for analytics departments.
Yeah.
Both in teams and at PFF, and therefore not our job.
Exactly.
The other guy I thought really helped himself was Blake Freeland, the offensive tackle from BYU, whose numbers were just nuts.
Yeah.
The dude ran under 5 flat for the 40, whatever. 37-inch vertical jump at that size is ridiculous. How are you able to get over 300 pounds that far in the air?
I don't know. It's a record.
That's madness. 10-foot broad jump, like, just... again, like, looked athletic during all the workouts and drills and that kind of thing.
Yeah, and it shows on tape, right? He was perfect for BYU. Their wide zone stuff, his ability to move at that size was always, like, eye-opening. But 302 is so he's 6'8", not 6'7". 302 is a bad weight. That's a bad weight at 6'8". That's body habitus-wise, like, that's a tight end, you know? Like, that's a little bit bigger than Darnell Washington. So he still needs to get a lot, lot stronger to play in the league. But the traits are there to develop, that's for damn sure.
What about losers?
Touch more on the winners. I thought all the other top guys, Broderick Jones, Anton Harrison, Darnell Wright, Paris Johnson, and DeJuan Jones, anything they did, I thought they were winner. You know, they solidified their stock wholesale. But I do think on the other end, losers, some interior guys really stuck out. John Michael Schmitz, and now center is probably the least athletically driven position in the NFL. What they do at the combine, like, his numbers are fine by NFL standards, but he's listed at 320, comes into the Senior Bowl 308, and now 301 at the combine. And those are different. 301 is a different center than 320, vastly. Mm. So that's probably the biggest where it's just like, he's actually smaller than, like, Luke Whipler, who's being called the smaller center in this draft class. So that one's one where I am a little, I guess, just worried about how his play strength will translate to the NFL. And then Osiris Torrance, he's not going to test well as a bigger guard, 6'5", 330. But you'd like him to be a little more explosive than he probably was if you're really going to draft that guy in the first round. You know, 1.8 4.10 split, 23.5-inch vertical are just, those are bad numbers. Those are bad numbers.
I will say that anybody that didn't outrun me in the 40 is automatically a loser.
Yeah.
I don't care how much extra weight you're carrying.
If I outpace you. DeJuan Jones is two of you, so.
He's more than two of me.
More than
two of
you.
Isn't he 370-something?
He's 374.
That's more than two of me. Like, and he was, he was 5'3", 8". Was that right?
Yeah.
So he's more than two of me. And over 40 yards, admittedly, in this kind of outfit, he's like right on my shoulder over 40 yards. That's terrifying. Like, you might be able to stay out of his grasp, but if he catches you, you're dead.
Imagine getting tracked down. Like, that's a something, you know, like a game you play is you have to just outrun DeJuan Jones.
Yeah.
You know, he's just like coming behind you.
And he's right on your shoulder over 40 yards. It's ridiculous. Like, that's when you're, you know, when you're playing a game like football, it's like, all right, you are one of the smaller people on this field. But the great news is you outrun the giant people, so it all balances out. If all of a sudden the giant people are faster than you, now it's just like, what are you bringing to the table here? You're getting tracked down by the people that are twice your size. And if there's a collision involved, you are losing bad.
Yeah,
that's a rough thing when you're looking at these NFL guys. Also, the guy that looked like he wrecked his knee during the drills has to be a loser.
Wanya pulled his hand. Ronnie Morris, the Oklahoma back, pulled his hamstring. Andrew Voorhees, the USC guard.
He looked
guard,
like he did an ACL.
Did a bad tweak. He was crumpled.
Has there been news as to what that actually was?
Because that I've seen.
That looked like a knee injury.
Yeah.
A non-contact down in the change of direction drills thing. It had to be kind of carted, not carted off, but had to be taken off. So that's pretty rough. Hopefully he'll be okay. But that's not a good thing to happen. Also, by the way, who was the guy that suffered an ankle injury due to what was being termed a pain threshold test? Did you see that?
I saw that.
What the hell was that?
I don't know.
And then
I think he didn't pass, though.
Either that or he did pass, but as a result of it, my pain threshold is so high that you've actually been able to wrench my ankle off the leg bone and I didn't flinch. But it turns out that's going to invalidate the rest of my workout because it no longer functions. But then after the fact, like, Rap Sheet was like, actually, clarification, the quote unquote pain threshold test was not a pain threshold test, was something different. It's like Legal on line one would like to strenuously point out that this was not
a result of that.
Yeah. Or not what it was being termed. We did not pull on this guy's ankle till he hurt himself.
Yeah.
That's essentially what Legal would like to clarify. But, that doesn't seem great.
That's a faller. You wrench your ankle just in a normal run-the-mill medical test. That's falling down draft boards.
Well, it's definitely that. That's one side of it. I've got some questions about that medical test. I'm not going to lie. Like, the kind of medical exam that ends up injuring a giant 300-plus pound offensive lineman, that doesn't feel okay to me.
Yeah, we need more info.
Right. There needs to be more info, and ideally not coming from a guy who's just giving whatever info was given to him. One NFL research tweet that was thrown out that I forgot to mention during the Anthony Richardson thing that we need to put out. Florida quarterback Anthony Richardson at the combine. 4.44, faster than CeeDee Lamb.
Oh, these tweets.
6'4.5" is taller than George Kittle. 244 pounds is heavier than Hassan Reddick. 10.5-inch hands are bigger than DeAndre Hopkins. 40.5 vertical is higher than Davante Adams. And a 10'9" broad jump is longer than OBJ.
Mm.
Those are all pretty freakish athletes.
So you're saying he's a wide receiver?
I'm saying he's a super freak.
No, I mean, yeah, he really is. And that's the interesting conversation that you got to weigh in this draft class is just what do you do with that? Like what he's the weirdest wide receiver prospect I can remember because there's
quarterback prospect.
Exact quarterback prospect, excuse me. Because I got the testing numbers in my mind, but just because the athletic gifts are so unique, so prodigious, and just as a runner, he's like I said, the tight end thing. If you just switch to tight end, he'd be a first rounder. Like that guy's, you don't see athletes like him every day. But as a passer, I mean, if he couldn't run, he would not be playing quarterback right now. You know, if he ran a 4.8 instead of a 4.4. He would have already switched to a different position.
So I kind of wrote in my notes, you know, like we are talking Cam Newton, all-time super freak, it might be time to reevaluate. And then I said, on the other hand, Matt Jones, you know? So yeah. Matt Jones
was the super
way back in the day, technically a quarterback at Arkansas, ended up being an NFL tight end, wide receiver. Mm-hmm. But Matt Jones had some all-time freaky measurements.
Yeah.
Now, it wasn't necessarily as across the board, but we're talking a 4.38 at, what was he, 242 pounds? Mm-hmm. A vertical of 39.5, so not quite the 40.5, but, you know, right there. 123-inch broad, what does that translate to?
10.3.
So 1.53 10-yard, that's the guy that, like, his knock was the get-off, and that was a 1.53. Like, Matt Jones put up some pretty all-time numbers and yet was garbage as an NFL quarterback.
I went back, actually, this was a couple of months ago, I don't even know what it was, and watched Matt Jones' like actual quarterback tape. He was one of the worst passers. He threw like someone who just, you know, like who's not a quarterback, just picks up a ball and throws.
Right.
You know, kind of just.
Which is probably not far from what happened. Like, we have this all-time super freak athlete that's just play him at quarterback because that's where he's going to have the
biggest
impact.
He's going to touch the ball the most.
Yeah. So, I'm not saying Anthony Richardson is Matt Jones. No, I'm just saying that those all-time freaks have existed before. And if you are bad enough as a quarterback, you still aren't going to play well.
Yeah. So, it'll be very fun to watch. I will say, though, after this combine, maybe my biggest takeaway, I really like this quarterback class. I really do think those four guys, I think there's all kind of, there'll all be starters that won't look like shit, Zach Wilson. You know, like they all have very much NFL translatable ability that would surprise me that if they really stunk it up in the league.
And we finally got the numbers, the measurements on Bryce Young.
Yeah. Oh yes. Oh, we didn't even talk that. Oh, no. Let's talk some Bryce Young a little bit.
So, what were our official numbers? We got 5'10"
and an eighth.
And an eighth.
204 pounds.
204 pounds.
So same height as Kyler Murray.
Yes. And only 3 pounds lighter than Kyler Murray.
But Murray's was gassed up. Young's is gassed up more.
Oh yeah.
We're being real.
Then we got a hand size, which was 9.5, 9.58. So like a big hands for a guy that size.
So similar to like a Russell Wilson who's got over 10-inch hands.
Yeah, yeah.
Like so, where that's good. You know, that good hand size, he can control the ball. You see that on tape. He does some nice ball handling stuff.
And having seen him both, you know, this far away on a podium and standing next to all these quarterbacks during the drills when he was doing nothing, I don't believe 204 pounds for a second. I don't even think he's in the vicinity of 204 pounds.
Yeah.
I don't know what he did to get to 204 pounds on a scale, but he's not in the ballpark of that. Like, what did CJ Stroud weigh in at?
Oh, I actually don't remember. I didn't even, like, check because
matter. Because it's 213 or whatever it is. He's standing next to Kyler Murray, or not Kyler Murray, to Bryce Young, and the difference in size between those two dudes is insane. There's just no way there's only 10 pounds or whatever it is between them.
No, I agree. And you look at him on tape, and he looks like this receiver class. You know, he looks like Josh Downs. He looks like Jordan Addison. It is not much to him.
Like, there's a picture.
There's never going to be too much to him. Like, those guys, you know, don't get to 200.
There's
no
a
way
picture
NFL, you know?
After the game of Stetson Bennett and him, you know, doing the whole shake hands, say, great game thing in the middle of the field. Stetson Bennett is 5'11 and 192 by his combine numbers. And Young is smaller than him.
Yeah.
And he's smaller than him now. So maybe, you know, 15 pounds of water. I don't know how much you have to drink in order for that to be a thing.
Milk. I'm telling you, it's
but
milk.
It's not even close. Like, by the way, Stetson Bennett had another weirdly smooth 40 time. You see his run?
Yeah, 4.6.
He looked like he was jogging.
Yeah.
He
didn't want to go too fast. He
the
didn't
first
want to
be, 10 was, you know, hustle, and then just smooth jog for the rest
he
of it.
He didn't want people saying Stetson Bennett slot corner, or, you know, Stetson Bennett switch to safety. He didn't want that conversation to start.
He had such a sort of smooth jog that they, like, Jeremiah or whatever was like, he was just cruising that. The next time will be faster. And he's like, no, the second one's just cruising as well. I don't know if he was deliberately torpedoing his own 40 time or if he's just that smooth a runner.
Well, you remember Zach Robinson said he deliberately did not go all out in the 40 because he didn't want that to be...
Right.
He didn't want the athletic
dual threat quarterback thing.
He didn't want that, which is interesting. So maybe Stetson Bennett didn't want that. But I do want to go back to Bryce Young for a bit. So the size, it does matter. I'm not going to sit here and say that being short is just wave it away at the quarterback position. There are things that, you know, same hit that an Anthony Richardson takes, he's far, far more likely to get injured. You know, the injury risk is real. The aspects that to scheme around with, like, him setting super deep in the pocket, him not being able to do a lot of quick game, that's all very real. But I just go back to, he's been 5'10", 180 since, you know, high school.
Right.
Since Matter Day. He had the number one and number two ranked team in the country his junior and senior years at Matter Day. He was a five-star number one quarterback recruit coming out of high school. Like, he was insane in high school. Goes to Alabama, wins the Heisman his first year, insane at Alabama. And the play style that he has in terms of just he movement skills-wise, you know, I'm actually sad that he didn't just come in what he was going to play at and do the three-cone and short shuttle, because you cannot touch this guy on tape. He has the best escapability. I think he's even more difficult to corral in the open field, just one-on-one, than even like Kyler Murray. It's close, but he's right in that realm of just that high level of elusiveness. And then I have not seen anyone enter the realm of Patrick Mahomes' ability in terms of just being able to process kind of trash when you're outside the pocket, when it's just like,
yeah,
it's not routes anymore, it's just freestyling. His ability to see those plays
and anticipate where it's going to end up. Yeah.
Is no one's had that. No one's had that anytime in the last 5 years.
That's a huge thing. It's not just like his ability to see it is amazing, but yeah, also his ability to calculate where the bodies mm-hmm. are going to wind up, which is why part of why Mahomes can make those plays that like Brett Favre couldn't, you know?
Yeah.
Brett Favre has one of the greatest arms the NFL has ever seen, and yet like almost his biggest Achilles heel was making all these Mahomes throws that lead you into trouble. Like yeah. the throw back across yeah. your body thing that you're not supposed to do because yeah. it causes problems. Mahomes, for some reason, is able to calculate where those bodies are going to end up and find the one that actually works as opposed to the one that's going to hang there for long enough for a linebacker or a safety or a corner mm-hmm. to cut across it from somewhere stupid. Bryce Young has a lot of that about him.
Yeah, it truly is. The processing speed, the ability with which he just like goes through things as quickly as he does. And one of my favorite aspects to his game is that he will avoid pressure and stick with concepts. Like he'll like, he basically in the pocket just moves towards space. Like if you watch him in the pocket, he's never set. You know, he doesn't play like Tom Brady where he just gets to his drop back and then he's there. He's always kind of moving towards space to give himself maximum maneuverability because he knows he's short. Like
yeah.
it's NFL kind of, you know, the injury thing, there's not really a big difference between light and big at the quarterback position because it alters your play style. When you're bigger, you take more hits by design, or you're willing to take more hits. When you're light like Young, you're avoiding them at all costs. And so his play style is such that he's always just trying to find space and he's moving up in pockets, moving outside of pockets, always working the concept still as he's doing it, which is something that I can't say for any of the other guys in this draft class the way he does it.
Yeah, I mean, I keep coming back, recircling every time we talk quarterbacks is, you know, there's a lot to like about each one of them. You can talk yourself into various whatever, but the gap in tape between Bryce Young and any of the rest is so huge.
I agree.
He's by far and away the best tape of any of these guys. Yeah. And then it's just how much do you care about what is essentially unprecedented size.
Yeah.
And you're right. There's no real correlation between size and injury rate and all that kind of stuff. It's a play style thing. But sooner or later, there's going to be a play exactly like Tua where mm-hmm. a Christian Wilkins just gets a hold of your jersey, one hand, and simply tosses you into the ground like you're a child.
It happens.
And there's nothing you can do about it. Yeah. And you're going to bounce off the turf differently when you're 185 versus Josh Allen. You know what I mean?
He needs one of those, one of those like fall suits, you know, for people working
yes.
on. He needs one of those for his body where it's like you're accelerating too fast.
Yeah, yeah. And
all of a sudden
automatically inflates.
It inflates and he just gets into a bubble.
Motorcycle riders, the MotoGP guys have those those leather suits that they have. When they hit the turf, those things automatically explode and inflate like an airbag. And you see them after they've crashed. They like walk to the side.
The Michelin Man.
The thing is like inflated and they can't get the thing down. Or it can happen when that happens and then they have to try and get back up on the bike with the suit that's like trapping them in a shell. More breaking news. Mike Garofolo says the Saints are closing in on a deal with Derek Carr.
Ooh.
That's the most logical landing spot.
Well, they were trying to trade for him when it was actually going to cost them things. So presumably they would have been the team most keen on taking Derek Carr.
Yeah. And the Jets just, they should set their sights higher. Set your sights higher.
Yes. Yeah. So the Saints, to me, were the most logical team because they're the only team, I think, where Derek Carr would have been plan A.
Yeah.
There's a lot of teams that might want Derek Carr, mm-hmm. but as, you know, after the thing they really wanted didn't materialize.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're going to want to go after Aaron Rodgers, or you're going to want to go after the QB in the draft. And if you can't get those, then sure, Derek Carr would upgrade what we have. But you know he wants that as plan A, except the Saints, who are like, we got Andy Dalton, and this division's right there for winning. Derek Carr comes in, we're immediately back in the playoffs.
That's the thing. It's your, in the AFC East, you have to go beat the Bills, and you have to go beat the Dolphins. Does Derek Carr make you better than either of those two? That's debatable.
Yes.
I don't know if it does. It's right. Like you're very much still no. Does Derek Carr make the Saints better than the Falcons, Panthers, and Bucks right now? Yeah, hell yeah, he does. So I do think that's why you're seeing. That's why I think it's the best landing spot for him.
So I got a fantastic update for the what's his name? Andrew Voorhees.
Yeah. USC guard.
This is amazing. So okay, is feared to have suffered a torn ACL. So that's stock down.
Okay.
But, check this out. According to Tom Pelissero, somehow Voorhees still did the bench press this morning. The dude went out there with a suspected torn ACL, which means a torn ACL. That just means they haven't MRI'd it yet. You know. You're torn an ACL. And pumped out 38 reps.
Oh!
With a torn ACL.
Big boy.
That somebody signed this guy now. Forget the draft. Just put in the card.
That was the most of anyone in attendance.
That's insane.
Second most, 34. That's great.
That's one of the most ridiculous thing, like combine stories I've ever heard.
Ah, that sucks for him because he's already a sixth year. I thought a solid guard prospect. I don't think anything special, but I think he's a guy who could start day one and you're not upset about it.
Yeah.
But now it's like, damn, you're 25 years old the next time you're seeing the football field.
With a red shirt injury season behind you. But that's the kind of like, it sounds stupid, right? But that bench press thing is the kind of thing that somebody will go to bat for that guy to keep him on a roster. You know what I mean? To keep him around, to give him a chance. That's that is the kind of thing that NFL teams will go to bat for.
Yeah.
Like I think at the very minimum, he's going to get a shot somewhere to make a team, to stick around, to show that he can be a guy,
mm-hmm.
even if obviously outside of that, everything is bad, torn ACL. Given that career profile is rough.
This is an Andrew Voorhees fan podcast now.
Absolutely. I'm 100% on board of that. Dude, look at the chat. Dude, Charlie Rogers, somebody tell Sam you don't need your legs to do the bench press. I don't think that's really the point. Like, the dude has a torn ACL and then went out there and benched 225 38 times. I don't even care if he needed it. Like, the fact that he did that whilst everybody else would be, like, in a hospital bed with their leg up, waiting for the MRI, you know, to determine that they were done. That's, you know, that's the point. Not the fact that you needed the knee.
We're not confusing the bench press with squats. So don't,
correct.
Don't get it twisted.
Right. That's a hell of a week for that guy. All right. We're out. I think we're done now. That's our Monday Combine Review podcast. I'm thinking, Michael, you're back tomorrow. Is that right?
Yes, I'm back tomorrow.
Steve's going to be back on Wednesday. I'm thinking tomorrow it's mock draft time.
Oh, how do we want to mock? Do we want to?
So the stock exchange used the PFF mock draft sim. I'm thinking we might do that.
Sim.
We might steal that and just do one line.
And we alternate picks, or we
could do that.
Combo GM, we're the war room. We have to agree on a pick, or
why don't we ask the people for what they want? I'm good
let
either
us
way.
Know which could, one sounds more intriguing to you guys.
We could alternate picks, or we could collectively be the general manager / the war room for each individual team. Let us know what you want to do. Fire it in the comments of the YouTube. Fire it to our email, NFLpodcast@pff.com. And we will do whatever the majority of people would like us to do.
Majority rule.
That's it. So thank you very much, Michael. Thank you all for listening, for viewing on YouTube. It's been a blast. We'll be back tomorrow, and Steve will be back on Wednesday. Take it easy.